Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
From Harrah's Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harris.
You're good, kid, but as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up.
Now, from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
As we begin the fourth year of the Final Table Poker Show and a new introduction to a little bit of one of the great poker movies of all time, The Cincinnati Kid. Hi, I am Paul Harris, sitting here in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis. My partner Dennis Phillips is out in Las Vegas. Hello, Dennis.
How are you doing, Paul? How's the weather in St. Louis?
It's actually not bad. We've had a nice non-wintery couple of weeks here with temperatures in the 50s most days.
Cool. All right.
How about there?
Not bad out here. It's a little cool for this area, but, you know, it's definitely not bad. We're actually going to head up to Brian's Head this coming weekend. Brian Head to do skiing.
Oh, really?
Before you laugh too much, no, I really don't know how to ski. Yes, I will follow my butt. But you can have prop bets that way if you want.
What's the over-under on number of times gravity overtakes you?
Oh, can we speak in those higher terms?
For a guy who grew up in the flat middle of Illinois, mountains might be a little bit of a challenge for you.
Yeah, well, I guarantee I can make it to the bottom somehow.
Well, sure. Eventually, yeah, maybe I'm one of those ambulance toboggans, but you'll make it to the bottom eventually. We've got Jack Effel coming up on today's show as our guest. Jack is the tournament director of the World Series of Poker. He'll tell you everything you need to know about the 2012 WSOP, including the fact that there's no November 9 this year. I know that's a tease because that's how they tweeted it last week. We'll explain in just a couple of minutes when Jack joins us. Before we get to anything else, though, congratulations on your win on our prop bet about the Super Bowl. It wasn't really a prop bet. You just took the Giants plus three, and, of course, they beat my Patriots by four. So I owe you dinner.
I'm thinking about a 1947 Petrus.
See, this is what I was talking about last week on the show. Because I know you like wine. See, here's the thing. Your girlfriend doesn't drink, and I don't drink, so it's you and my wife who are going to be sharing the bottle of wine when we all get together, and I know that's going to cost me more than the meal.
Oh, it may not. We may be nice. I tell you what, you've got the new restaurant there in Harrah's. Maybe we can all meet up there.
Yeah, the Kelly English Steakhouse here. We can certainly do that sometime when you're in town.
All right, cool.
All right, now before we get to Jack, we have one piece of breaking news that we have to get to, and that involves Full Tilt Poker, which unfortunately has been an ongoing topic for us here because the players still are not going to get their money back anytime soon. But we found out where some of the money is. It turns out that it's owed to Full Tilt Poker by 19 poker pros. Almost all of them were former Full Tilt pros. One of them, Poker Stars pro, Barry Greenstein. These 19 players, according to Group Bernard Tappy lawyer Benham Dayanim, they owe Full Tilt $16.5 million that the site loaned them and which they then used to play in some of the online games and some of those nosebleed games that we've heard about. Now, Barry did take the 2+2 last week and post a statement there saying, yes, I do owe $400,000 to Full Tilt from several years ago when I played in some of the high-stakes games, which is kind of weird since he's been a Poker Stars pro for so long, but I guess he wanted to play higher than the games were on Poker Stars. But he says he's not going to give it back to Full Tilt. He says, I owe it to Full Tilt, not Group Bernard Tappy. If I had borrowed from GBT, I wouldn't have an argument about paying them back. I believe most people would not like me to hand it to Full Tilt Poker at this time. If I owed Madoff or Enron money, I wouldn't pay them either, but I would wait for a better way to settle the debt. What's your take on all of this, since you know so many of these people?
Where do I begin? First of all, the idea that, that Full Tilt had loaned out $16.5 million of what may have been depositors' money to other Full Tilt pros. Not blaming the Full Tilt pros if they're giving them the money, but what management decision allowed that? Why was it not monitored? How was it that they were able to go years and years without repaying this debt?
Yep.
How was it able to get up to $16.5 million? I mean, so many things I have questions for and no answers. Let me address Barry's real quick. I believe Barry was the only one of the 19 pros to come out and give his side of the story. And he did say in that that he has no problem repaying it. He just wants to make sure that the money ends up in the right hands. And I believe that as soon as it's clearly established that the money is going to go back to maybe not just U.S. players, but back to the people who had money on deposit at Full Tilt, that Barry will honor his debt without any problem. And another one from the position I am, people wonder why Barry hadn't paid it up back before. Well, they missed something at the beginning of his statement. He had a number of people that owed him money, a number of people that played on Full Tilt that had money on Full Tilt. An easy way to transfer and get your money back is by somebody actually just sending you money from one account to another within the same online system. And I think that that's what Barry meant, that he was hoping these people that owed him money would pay their bills by, you know, transferring it to him, and that would eliminate his debt there. But if you notice in his thing, he's not trying to get out of it. He fully admits it. He even says that the Tappy Group offered to make him a, quote, deal to either pay by installments or a lesser amount. He didn't take that either. So of the 19 pros, I think you don't have to worry too much about Barry paying his money back. I think it's clearly established that that will be handled. Now, the other one, the other 18 who have kept silent worry me, because they actually came out in a statement today and said that this could, well, that basically the Tappy Group is not going to assume this debt, that this could put a major hindrance on completing the deal. And obviously then, if the deal doesn't go forward, nobody gets paid.
Right.
Which is horrible. So I'm hoping that the other 18 pros will, you know, work out something. If they don't have the money and they have a way to do an installment, if they have, they can find something, rather. If it's a debt owed, it's a debt that needs to be paid. I guess that's the simplest way to say it.
Maybe the DOJ needs to assign a middleman who can take the money, and so it doesn't go to the Bernard Tappy Group, and it doesn't go to the DOJ, but it's designated on a fund that will only go to the players. Now, I know GBT says that might keep this deal from going through. That might be a negotiating ploy. That might be a fact. I don't know. But they're also talking about how they expect to have the site up and running again by March 1st. Both of these things cannot be true.
Good point. And again, if they would just set up an escrow account so that you know the money is there, the money is placed there until it is firmly established where it is, you know, destined to go, and that Barry then would be relieved of any and all, you know, responsibilities for that debt. Right now, there is no deal in place, correct?
Right.
So the Tappy Group doesn't own Full Tilt, so how can Barry pay the Tappy Group? I honestly don't quite see the logic there. Am I missing something?
No, and he can't give it back to Full Tilt Poker because we don't know what happens to those funds. Would they be immediately seized by the DOJ, and would the DOJ be using that money to... Somebody from the Department of Justice needs to step in here and help clarify these sort of things on behalf of the people who got screwed, and that's the players. And every time we talk about this situation, they're the ones that we are most concerned about. Frankly, Barry Greenstein's a friend of ours, but he'll be fine. Phil Ivey, he'll be fine. All the rest of these guys, they'll be fine. But the players who had anywhere from $100 to $25,000, who knows how much they had locked up on there that they haven't been able to get back, that were supposed to be in secure funds for them to either play with, or if there was no site, to get their money back and withdraw it at will, they're the ones that we're concerned about. And something, somebody has to step up and be their advocate in this. And right now, they have none.
I 100% agree with you, and I do think that the DOJ could clarify and simplify this very, very easily. If they can come out with a public statement that the money's going into an escrow, that the money will be used to play back there, payback players or whatever, that everybody in Barry especially then can say, okay, now I feel safe in sending you the money. That's all they got to do. It's really not that complicated.
Yep.
So let's not get this dang deal held up. Let's get the money back to the players where it belongs and move forward. Good grief.
This is the final table. Go ahead.
Well, I'm tired of all of these hurdles that keep coming up. And I don't have any money on Full Tilt, and I'm getting frustrated with this deal.
Yep, same with me.
I can just imagine these guys that have the money there. Some of them had most of their life savings in there,
yep.
And it's now been a year, and they haven't gotten anything back. It's just horrible.
Yep, I don't have a penny on there either, so we're in the same boat. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. He's Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. And we move on now, happily joined by Jack Effel. Jack is the tournament director of the World Series of Poker, which had an incredibly successful finale again with the November 9, just 2.5 months ago. And last week, shook up the poker world by tweeting that, tomorrow, the World Series of Poker 2012 schedule will be out, and you'll notice on there is no November 9. In the 18 hours between that tweet and the release of the actual facts, the speculation in the poker community ran rampant, and everybody thought, well, this is the end of something that Dennis helped to start in 2008 as a member of the first original November 9. The truth is, it's going to be something similar. It's just the word November that threw you off, not the 9. Jack, welcome back to the show. I'm going to ask you to start off by explaining the decision.
Well, first of all, good afternoon, and thanks for having me on the show, Paul, Dennis. It's always a pleasure to visit with you guys and talk about the exciting stuff that's happening for the World Series of Poker, and more importantly, what's going to happen for the 2012 World Series of Poker. So let's talk about the final table of the main event. So every year it's been delayed, and you know every year it continues to gain more momentum, more popularity, and it continues to elevate the status of the players who make the final 9. And of course, this year is an election year. And so during the same time frame that we normally have our final table, all eyes will be on who will be the next president. So this year, we have decided to move it back one weekend to the last weekend in October, which is really just a week difference. But we want to continue to highlight the premier event of the world for the World Series of Poker, the main event, the most prestigious poker event on the planet. And we don't want that to get confused with all the other stuff that's going on in the world. We want to give the players their chance to shine and to give their recognition as they have every single year. They deserve it. They made it there, and that's what we want to continue to do.
Well, I think actually what you're doing is you're doing it as a favor to the politicians because you're afraid that your ratings might be higher than theirs on that weekend if you do the same.
Well, you know, that's the polite way of saying it, Dennis. We'll let you get away with that, and I'll semi-agree with you on that, of course, absolutely.
But, Jack, I'm curious why, with the brand November 9 already in existence for 4 years now, why didn't you move it back the other way and push it to the second week of November and just keep it the November 9?
Again, you start moving into closer to the holidays, the traveling, people wanting to be with their families, that sort of thing. So, again, you know, tough there as well. But, again, it seemed to work best for our broadcasting partner, ESPN. It works better for logistics, works better for, you know, being able to move Penn and Teller out, you know, set up the final table and get all of that stuff underway. Because, you know, there's quite a bit of logistics that take place at the Rio for that week leading up to the final table. So we definitely have to have all of our partners in line with respect to time and execution.
We have a lot of questions about a lot of the different events, new things and twists on old things and some that have not changed. But just about the November 9, what are you calling it now? I mean, you can't eliminate one player and call it the October Octet.
Hey, so you know what? We've asked players and we've asked the public to share their thoughts with us with respect to what it should be called. You know, some have said it should be called the October Elite. It should be called the October Final 9. You know, whatever the case may be, you know, people should jump on our fan page and let us know what they think on Facebook or tweet us at WSOP. We'd love to hear what everybody thinks, and you know, we may redesign and call it something else, but the most important thing is that it's the final table of the most prestigious poker event in the world. That's what matters, and that's what we're going to be highlighting.
Sweet. I love that. Got one question. When I noticed when I was reading through it that you said you're playing down to the final two on the first day, and then they come back to play heads up. That's
it's going to be two. It's going to be three. You know, it all depends on, you know, the schedule that we have and the time slots on ESPN and that sort of thing. So last year we did our almost live coverage, and, you know, we want to continue to build on that. You know, the plan has not been exactly 100% finalized. So all of those things are flexible. Could be two, could be three. You know, we'll see and let the public know in due time for sure.
Dennis, you want it to be three, don't you?
I absolutely do. I like the format with the three. Thought it worked very, very well. And so my vote would be to play down to the three and let the three of them come back for day two.
And we thought it was great, too, because, you know, you get a little bit more action and something a little bit more for the audience. And, you know, you get to see that first. And although, you know, Ben didn't last very long, you know, once we got started. But it was kind of nice having three versus two. And it did add a little extra level of excitement for sure.
Do you worry if you have three? That you won't have a Ben Lamb going out on the first hand and you'll end up with something that goes on much longer than it did between our two finalists last November?
You know, that's happened every year. Every year that we've actually done the ESPN final table for World Series of Poker, it's always been, God, if it gets to three, what happens, you know, if it, you know, goes one hand and, you know, one guy, you know, eliminates the other two, what do you do then? You don't have a final heads-up show. So you obviously want to protect that and be able to continue to highlight this. And, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in terms of the probability of something like that happening. It could happen. That, you know, so three players is kind of good to keep some excitement. Plus, look at how long it takes to get from nine to a winner, right? You know, an extra couple of hours of rest for these guys is good, too. So playing 9-3 and 3-2 a winner, this past year actually turned out to be perfect. It went a decent amount of time. There was a good amount of play on day one. Nobody had to stay too late. And then day two lasted a reasonable amount of time and gave the viewers a very exciting show. And the players were rested and ready to go as well. So I think that this last mix of 9-3 and 3-2 a winner worked pretty well. And if I had to bet on it, I'd probably bet that it'll be very similar this year.
Dennis, I can't remember, when you finished third, how long did it take once you got down to three? How many hands was it before you went out?
It wasn't actually that many. I think we played for about an hour, three-handed, of which they showed one hand on TV, and he edited it down.
Yeah.
That was a hand you don't want to remember, right, Dennis?
yeah, that's not exactly.
We're talking with Jack Effel, the tournament director of the World Series of Poker, who's just come out with the 2012 schedule. By the way, tomorrow, February 8th, is when they're opening up registration online at WSOP.com, and all the details will be on there if you want to start planning your adventure for the series, which begins on May 27th and will go until July 16th. The other thing about the main event, Jack, is that you have made it shorter. No longer will it take 2 weeks for a person who plays day 1A to get down to the final nine.
Yeah, the main event, you know, over the last few years has been relatively long, about 2 weeks in duration, which does make it tough on people that have jobs and lives and everything else, and the additional cost to stay in the hotel and all of those things, be away from their families. And, you know, the other thing is that we really had no choice because we just didn't have the space to accommodate them without, you know, cramming everybody into the tables for a shorter period of time. But this year, you know, it's not going to be a problem. We're going to have plenty of capacity, plenty of room to accommodate, you know, as many players that want to play the main event. We'll have upwards of 470 tables in the convention area, the largest ever to be open for a poker event, over 125,000 square feet of gaming. So we're going to have three starting days. So players can still choose their day, a Saturday, Sunday, or Monday start. And then we're going to automatically go right into day number two. And 2A and 2B are going to play, you know, on the same day, but they're going to play in different rooms. They will play down. 2C will play the following day. And then on day three, we'll combine the entire field, and we'll play five levels until we get down to a final nine. Last day probably, you know, be a little bit longer. We usually hit the final table about level 35, 36, somewhere in that range. And then we'll pack up and everybody will be on a little bit of break. But the good news is now we've gone down from, you know, 13, 14 days down to 10, which I think is going to be great for especially the guys that come out and are going to be here from day 1A all the way to the end. Hopefully those extra days, you know, players who have traditionally taken 2 weeks off to come to the WSOP may decide to come in early, spend the 4th of July weekend here in Las Vegas, watch the fireworks, maybe play, you know, one of the other bracelet events that will be going on during that time, you know, maybe catch some satellite action, some live games or a show, do something fun leading into the weekend. So we hope that it will give these guys a little more flexibility to enjoy themselves and not have to just dedicate it to one event. Because the truth of the matter is we can accommodate them. The structure is intact. And you come to play poker, and that's what you're going to get. You're going to get to play poker every day. You don't have to worry, I'm only going to play two levels today and eight levels tomorrow. No, you're going to play your five levels every day until we get down. It'll be nice and comfortable and a good experience for the players.
Let me tell you, first of all, if you're a poker player and you've never made it out here to see the World Series of Poker, you have to make it out here. Mm-hmm. There is nothing equal to it. When you walk into the Amazon room or the Pavilion room and you see literally thousands and thousands of players and you hear those chips being shuffled and you hear the cards being shuffled and you hear that shuffle up and deal, it's phenomenal. If you are a poker player, you have to come to the WSOP, period.
Now, well, Dennis, I couldn't have said it any better myself. You know, the WSOP is the one place in the summer, if you're a poker player, to be. You know, there's, you know, not everybody has an unlimited amount of funds. Not everybody can play in every single bracelet event. But the beautiful thing about the World Series of Poker is that it's a two-month-long festival with many, many thousands of opportunities to make money, to qualify for events, to play in bracelet events, to win fame, fortune, and of course the most coveted prize in poker. And if you don't want to play, it's a great place to come and vacation. The weather's beautiful. Catch your favorite poker action, you know, favorite poker player down in the hall. Get an autograph, buy a t-shirt, just have some fun and see what the World Series of Poker is all about, because I really think, like Dennis, of course I'm biased, it's one of the greatest experiences you can ever experience for a poker player or a poker fan.
Well, where I was going with this is last year you had about 380 tables, I think, give or take a dozen, depending on what it was. And last year there were times where your tournaments completely took over all of satellite tables, ate into the cash tables, the whole bit like that. So now you're adding 100 tables.
Yes, but honestly, we're adding 92 tables to be exact, and we're expanding into the Brasilia room. But here's the beautiful thing about how the logistics will work now. So the noon events will primarily begin in Brasilia, and then the overflow will spread into Pavilion and Amazon as needed, as we have these large fields and stuff, especially on the weekends. And then we'll break down into Brasilia, where the noon event will get to have, you know, peace and quiet and, you know, kind of their own event where, you know, they're not being bothered by the carnival barking of the satellites and the cash games and the deep stacks and all of those things. And, you know, we can maintain that great playing environment for our players. And then Pavilion itself, you're going to have cash games, you're going to have satellites, you're going to have deep stacks and megas, and of course overflow from the bracelet events. And then in Amazon, that's going to continue to be our champions room, where you'll see the restarts from the previous day's events. You'll see the final tables in action. The mothership will be set up for the final tables and the ESPN coverage, as well as we'll have all of the 5 o'clock events relocated back into Amazon, so those guys have, you know, a much better playing environment, less announcements, all of those things, and we get them out of Pavilion as well. And then, of course, the media will have their great setup that they have every year as well.
Wow. Okay, I'll make one prediction right here. You've added 92 tables. I'll still bet you on the weekends and that you run out of space.
I hope so.
Now, let's talk about the weekends a little bit, because the last couple of years, a few years ago, you started what's called the Stimulus Special, the 1K buy-in events, and you had tremendous turnout for that. You're doing those this year, but you also seem to have added more 1,500 no-limit events on the weekends. Am I correct?
Well, I mean, we just kind of rescheduled things. There's really like only one additional 1,500, and you still have the $1,000 events in there. We've just kind of changed our strategy just a little bit, where you have, instead of like 2-day, you know, 1Ks, you have the 1,500 on Saturday, which is a success, and the 1K on Sunday. So it gives, you know, the weekend warrior type kind of guys an opportunity to come in for 4 or 5 days, play a couple of events, you know, have a great WSOP experience, and make it back to their lives and jobs and that sort of thing. And hopefully a few of them get to make those calls to their bosses saying that they've won a bracelet and they're quitting or retiring from whatever profession they're in. But it works well to be able to handle the masses on the weekends. It works well to be able to accommodate all the deep stack players. The one thing that, guys, we have to remember when you have the World Series of Poker is that it's a series of poker events. You know, it's the bracelet events, it's the side events, it's the cash games, it's the satellites. You know, it's the place to come and do it all. And as Dennis alluded to, you know, we do run out of space from time to time, and, you know, we have to cut the $200 deep stack off at, you know, 1,400 players, or tell them to come back 2 hours later because our restart was too big and we had, you know, 3,000 players starting the noon tournament and that sort of thing. But we've made some good tweaks this year, A, by increasing our capacity, B, in, you know, kind of our restarts and how, you know, the noon events will now come back at 1 o'clock and the 5 o'clock events will now come back at 2 o'clock. And for the large fields, we'll play 11 levels on day one versus 10. And so with these little tweaks that we've made, we should be able to make it a much more enjoyable, comfortable experience where, you know, the lines aren't as long and, you know, people don't get shut out of their favorite activity and everyone can stay and play at the Rio throughout it and not have to be, you know, shut out and have to feel like they need to go somewhere else to play the game that they want. So I think that those tweaks are going to be really good. And, of course, I can talk about a lot of those, but we have a limited amount of time.
Yeah. While we're talking about the lower limit events, though, re-entry events have become very, very popular, as you know, on the World Series of Poker circuit. Matt Savage is doing them out at the LAPC. They're doing some of them on the WPT Tour now. This has become one of the hot things. Again, it used to be rebuy tournaments years ago. Then they went away for a while. You even eliminated them. Are you going to be doing any re-entry events at the WSOP this summer?
We actually are. And as a matter of fact, we are going to open up. The first day is going to be the day before Memorial Day. And so Memorial Day will be our first big 1,500 event, but that's only going to be a starting point. So we're going to build that whole week with a variety of really, really good events, and then we're going to lead into the weekend and have a Saturday-Sunday start, $1,500 buy-in. If players are eliminated on 9A, they'll be able to get into 9B. So that basically means we are having a re-entry event. We think it's going to be another one of those really huge prize pools and a really big first place for the winner. I'm hoping somewhere around the $1 million first place range and somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 player range. We think it's going to be a big one and well worth winning, and we hope that everyone will come out and play in that one. But yes, we're going to do one this year, see how it goes, and who knows? If it becomes a success, you could see more of them in the future. But again, you know, we want to, you know, we don't want to do too much at once. We want to give players a taste and variety and try things out and see how they like them. And if they're successful, then look and see what they what we can do for them in the future.
There are, of course, other events besides no-limit events. We'll talk about those in the second half hour of the show. We have to take a quick break. Then we're back with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at the World Series of Poker Room here at Harrah's St. Louis. And our guest is Jack Effel, the tournament director of the World Series of Poker. You can download our show via iTunes or listen via Stitcher Radio, or every Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We are live on Five Night of the Fan KFNS at KFNS.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis. where tonight they kick off their new bounty tournaments. 7 o'clock tonight, $100 buy-in. You knock out another player, you get $25. So you knock out four of the players, you're free rolling through the rest of the tournament and maybe earning some extra money along the way. There'll be a max of 50 players in here, but there will be alternates. You can get in for the first hour after the event. But get in here and sign up for it tonight. 10K in starting chips to play. Bounty tournament starts 7 o'clock tonight. It'll go on tonight and then restart again in 2 weeks. They're not doing it next Tuesday because that'll be Valentine's Day. And they'll be doing a Jack and Jill tournament here, male and female teams alternating levels for Valentine's Day, February 14th. And then the following week, back to the Tuesday night bounty tournaments. And don't forget, we're talking about the World Series of Poker here today with Jack Effel. You can qualify to go to the main event the same way Dennis did in 2008. With the $200 double shootout format, the next opportunity will be on the third weekend of this month. In fact, they're doing it the third weekend of every month. So that'll be Saturday and Sunday, February 18th and 19th. The first flight of 50 is at noon. The second flight of 50 is at 3 o'clock. All you got to do is beat your table in either one of those flights, and then you go to the final table at 6 o'clock that evening. You win that, and you've got a seat in the main event of the World Series of Poker. You can't be in the November 9 this year, but you can be in the October Elite or whatever it ends up being called. For more details, you just go to the website harrisstlewis.com. All right, lots more stuff to talk about with Jack Effel, Tournament Director of the World Series of Poker. Dennis, I'll throw it back to you.
Absolutely. Hey, one thing I want to make sure that the average listener realizes, when you're going out there to the World Series, you know, it's not just a whole series of 10K events. It's not, you know, nothing but all these pros and grinders that are out there. There's so much more for it. They have now expanded things so that there's daily tournaments as low as, I think, $135. And you can go out there. Jack, maybe you can talk about what the average player is. I think they only come out there for one or two events and you know, through a weekend. What's your average player when he walks in the door of the Rio?
You know, the average player really kind of plays a lot of stuff. You know, everybody wants to play in the bracelet events first and foremost. That's the reason why every poker player comes to Las Vegas for the most part. You know, you have the small percentage of guys who want to play other stuff, but the first reason is to get to that bracelet event somehow. And then for the everyday player, so the guys who may not be able to quite afford to get into the bracelet event, there are other things that could definitely be a gateway to the bracelet events and everything else. And so we understand that, you know, people want to play smaller buy-in tournaments. They want to play small buy-in cash games. They may only have $1,000 and are coming out to Las Vegas. They want to have a good time. They want to have, you know, good odds on their money. They want to have an opportunity to win something and to win something big. And we have that opportunity at the World Series of Poker, starting with the small satellites that we run from $65 up to $100,000. And those are for people that want to play in the bracelet event and want to win chips that can be used to buy into those events. Next up, if you don't have time to spend to play in a bracelet event or a satellite to play in a bracelet event, maybe you have a couple of $100 and you want to come play a tournament with a big first prize, I can tell you that our deep stack offerings are back like they were last year at 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 10 o'clock every single day, and the buy-ins are going to be $235, $185, and $135 respectively. And they're deep stack tournaments that will last all day. So for a couple of $100, you could take a shot at the 2 p.m. deep stack, and you could get, you know, a lot of chips and a lot of play and have a shot at winning $20,000, $30,000 first prize for a $200 buy-in. Last year we saw some of those events reach 1,500 players. You know, we actually had to shut players out. It was a huge event. The 6 o'clock event, we saw that event get, you know, 600, 800,000 players, and we definitely saw the 10 o'clock event even get 200 and 300 players most nights. So as Dennis said, as cheap as $135, you can play a cash tournament and win cash today. And once you win that cash, you might want to play some more of the deep stacks. You might want to go play some satellites or some bracelet events, or you might want to take your shot and go over to the big cash game and see if you can't run it up to $1 million that way.
Well, it doesn't have to be the big cash game. You can sit down on the small cash game with me.
That's right. You could go play. And I know that's what you're going to be doing out here, Paul. You're going to be trying to step on all all those little poker players who think they don't know how to play, and then they're going to draw out on you. They're going to show you 7-9, and they're going to take all your chips, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened last year. Thank you for reminding me. Let's talk about some of the new events. You have something this year that I've never heard of before, which is an ante-only event, a $1,500 buy-in. Does that mean no blinds?
Yeah, so let's talk about the ante-only event, and then we can obviously, let's talk about some of the other new events that are in the schedule. So the ante-only event is a real exciting new event that we're going to have, and yes, it doesn't play with blinds. Now, ante-only is played in different variations around the world and is becoming more and more popular. It was very popular online before it went to a live tournament environment, and so we wanted to have our own variation of it, and most of the time they play with a constant blind, but instead we're kind of switching it up a little bit, and every player will ante every single hand. The button will go in a clockwise motion around the table every single hand, and the player to the left of the button will have the option of entering the pot for whatever the minimum denomination is on the table, regardless of what the ante is. So if the green chips are still on the table, it costs you 25 to get in. Now, obviously, there'll be a lot of money that will be out in the center of the pot, so a lot of players will come in for a raise. A lot of people will come in, and they'll develop their own strategy of how that works, or they'll throw their hand away. But the key is that it will cost you something to enter the pot every single time, and every single hand you will have to ante. So what that means is players will have to make more decisions more rapidly every single hand, and of course, which is very strategic and will hopefully end up becoming one of the most popular new forms of poker out there.
Now, wait,
and see how it works for you. We did try it out at the Caesars Palace Circuit event last month. We had 200 players. Everybody loved it except for a couple, and the guys that I talked to said, you got to have us at the World Series. You got to have it. I love it. It's action-packed. It's not boring. I'm not sitting around. I'm getting to play a lot. You know, I'm learning a new strategy. You know, let's do it. And that's what we've done.
That's
going to be a fun one.
That's going to drive action like crazy. Dennis, have you ever played in something like this?
I have. And sometimes it's almost hilarious, especially if people don't realize what the strategy behind it is. Your antes are going up. You've got nine people at a table, and your ante is $500, so it's $4,500 in the middle of the pot. Guy to the left of the dealer still has $100 chips in front of him, so he bets 100 into a $4,500 pot.
Let me see. What are my odds here?
They don't realize that there's 1,000 in the center, like Dennis said, and it costs you a quarter to get in, but you know somebody's going to pop it. You know somebody's making it 500 or 600 to go. So definitely learning the strategy and how it works is part of the fun. But everybody that played it absolutely loved it, and I think it's going to be a huge success at the series. And I'm predicting that the event will probably get 1,500 players or better.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I love the tweaks you have to the game, because it brings up so much more of the intellect, so much more of the thinking, and what's the best strategy, and what's going to work, and everything like that. And this brings in a whole new scope of it, because now a 3-bet or a 4-bet may not even equal what's in the center of the pot already, at the center of the table already. I mean, there's so many different things and so much value out there. So it
if you'll notice the structure, we made some tweaks to the structure after we launched it at Caesars Palace, and you'll see how the first two levels repeat, the second two levels repeat, and the fifth and sixth level repeat. And what happened, what we're doing there is we want to ensure that guys get an adequate amount of play relative to the buy-in and relative to what you would if you were playing a traditional $1,500 no limit.
All right, talk about new events that are coming to the World Series of Poker this summer. You're going to have a 5K Mix-Max event, which we saw introduced at the WSOP Europe, which the grinder Michael Mizrachi took down. You're also going to be doing a four-handed event, a $2,500 buy-in four-handed event, because 8 and 6 weren't small enough, and you didn't want to get quite the heads up, so you're going in the middle with four-handed, which means that you're either under the gun or the cutoff.
Let's talk about it. So first, let's talk about the Mix-Max. Now, we launched that event in Europe. It got great reviews. The players loved it. And, you know, the event, the way that that event was created was we were sitting around trying to figure out, okay, we've got World Series of Poker Europe. We're in France. We can only play Hold'em. We can only play Omaha. You know, how do we come up with some new twists and exciting ways to play those two forms of poker? And we came up with the Mix Max to play nine-handed on day one, six-handed on day two, and then a 16-man bracket. Now, of course, in France, there has to be a random draw at the heads-up portion, and which was just really fine for the first event, but we want to make it even more strategic, and we're going to seed. We're actually, because the event's going to be bigger, nine-handed on day one, six-handed on day two, the final 32 will play a heads-up bracket, and we will seed it from highest chip count to lowest chip count, the same as they do in the NCAA final Sweet 16 March Madness. So what will be great about that is you're going to see some exciting matches now between the highest and low chip stacks, and of course, once the bracket is set, it'll play from 32 all the way down to a winner. So keep your eyes on that event. That's one for the young, aggressive, crazy players. That's one you don't want to miss. That one's going to be a lot of fun. But now let's talk about that Formax. Now, the Formax event, you know, again, it's another new form. Was six enough? Was eight enough? Is two enough? You know what? It's another way to continue to showcase a new way to play a game that everybody loves. They love six-handed. They love nine-handed. They love eight-handed. They love playing different versions of no-limit hold'em in a new way that creates new strategies and allows the best players to compete for the most coveted prize in poker. So at four-handed, more decisions are being made. You're looking at more hands. You're having to make more decisions, you know, very, very quickly. And, of course, tables are going to bust fast, a lot of moving around. And then when it gets down to, you know, a smaller portion of the field, this short action play is really going to show, you know, who's going to be the best in that environment. Because even at six-handed, you know, you can wait a little bit and your hand rankings may come down a little bit from where they were at nine-handed play. But when you come down to four-handed, obviously your blinds are coming around very quickly. You're going to have to make some decisions. So again, new strategy, new ways to showcase talent for these guys. I think it's going to be a great one.
I love some of these twists. One thing you said a few minutes ago that kind of you skipped right over. You were talking about satellites from $65 to $100,000.
Yeah, $125,000 to be exact. So if you want to take a shot at a single table to get into the $1 million one drop, the big one for one drop, we will definitely accommodate those guys. So eight guys could easily put up $125,000 and play a single table and have a buy into the $1 million event.
Yeah, that's going to happen a lot. That'll be going every day, won't it, Jack?
It'll be going any time eight guys want to do it.
I'm all up right now.
We invited our listeners to send us some questions via Twitter, so let's get to some of those. First of all, Doug Smith didn't have a question. He just says, props to you, Jack, for the best schedule yet, the three starting day main event beginning on Saturday and cutting the number of 10Ks were great moves. But on that subject, Andy Robinson says, why the decisions to cut down on the 10K championships and reduce the heads up from 25 to 10K?
All right, so let's talk about that. I don't think it's so much about the buy-in. I think it's what's the maximum buy-in you can have for an event that will get you the most amount of players and the largest prize pool to award the most prize money for an event. Because I think that's really the answer. Because at some point, you know, players obviously now can't afford to go in. And, you know, you have smaller fields. You have 100 guys, 200 guys. How do we optimize the events and have these guys compete for more prize money and maybe just a slightly smaller prize? You know, again, what's a better event? Would you rather invest $3,000 and win a bigger first place or invest $5,000 and win a smaller first place? You know, the whole deal is whether or not you feel you'd rather play with more players or less players. But I feel to give poker players the most value and the best competition that some of the buy-ins could be tweaked to be able to invest less, have a shot to win more, and in essence create a better event for all. And so what you saw this year is I evaluated all of the 10K events that were in the schedule, including the 25K, and I said, okay, you know, if we could drop the buy-in down, double participation, create, you know, a potentially larger prize pool than we did at the higher buy-in level, you know, it made sense. You know, why do you want to, you know, the whole deal about having big buy-ins and all of that is to have big prizes for guys to win and that sort of thing and to be able to compete at that level. So I think that there's kind of an optimal price point for certain events. That's why you saw, you know, like the No Limit Hold'em Shootout that traditionally gets, you know, 300 or 400 players down from 5K to 3K that we think it could get, you know, 700 or 800 players. You know, we saw like the Omaha 8 or better limit event for 5K instead of 10K and the 5K limit hold'em versus 10K and then of course the studs. You know, those events drew 100, 200 players. We feel that those events have potential to have 300, 400, 500 players, which will end up creating a larger prize pool and a better competition for the guys competing there. And so those are the decisions that we made. But now, as you could see, we left some of the 10Ks in, like the 10K pot limit hold'em, the 10K horse. There's a few events that, you know, we feel are good at those price points that, you know, players will compete at and have a shot to, you know, win bukus of money, obviously, the bracelet, and compete with the best competition. So I think it's, you know, it's just a matter of pricing them efficiently. As you can see, I think somebody pointed out it was like 35,000 less in buy-ins across the board. Yeah, okay, so there's a few less buy-ins, but the potential to win money is so much greater with these new events if they just look at the math.
I love all this. I'm going to talk about something that people don't normally bring up. The logistics of you guys putting this together. Just give me an idea. If you're going to have almost 500 tables there, how many dealers do you have to try and find in Vegas?
Well, if anybody's listening here and they have a heartbeat, two hands, and can deal, or they don't even need two hands, if they can deal, they should apply, and we will audition them. It's very tough. Every year we continue to hire more and more dealers and require more and more dealers for flawless execution. You know, obviously, you know, you want, you know, 1,500 of the greatest dealers in the world, which is about what we're hiring between the property itself with WSOP, the Rio Poker Room, and the cities. You're probably bringing on about 1,500 poker dealers to handle the additional business volume that we'll experience in June and July. And, of course, you know, everybody has to take an audition. Everybody has to be fluent in all the games. But we do offer, obviously, ongoing training for a lot of guys that are on the cusp. So you may have guys who've predominantly dealt no limit hold'em, limit hold'em in their past. You know, we have continuous training programs that go throughout the WSOP to teach these guys new games so we can continue to increase that dealer base. We have a dealer school going on right now where we're going to train 200 dealers over the next 6 months in 3-week intervals to deal all of the games. So we have additional dealers, but it's not one of those, okay, let's post the job and, you know, I know we'll choose 1,500 out of the 50 million dealers that are out there. That's not the case. The actual matter of fact is that the dealer pool is less and less because as more poker rooms and opportunities sprout out around the world for these guys, they find temporary places. So then when you have the WSOP and you need 1,500 dealers, you only have 1,000 to choose from. So you have to get creative in trying to continuously improve more and more dealers. And the question then begs, do you have, you know, less dealers and less tables to try to get, you know, the people that can get in, or do you try to continue to grow the product? So that's the balance that we juggle every single year. But I think we have really good processes in place with the dealer school, with the continuous training, and we actually started taking applications as soon as the first of the year hit, and we're already scheduling auditions. We began those 1st of February. So we're already on top of our game this year, trying to recruit the number that we need. We hope we're going to get there. Usually we fall short a little bit, but I think every year the dealers do get better.
I'm looking through our tweets here, Jack. Lots of people want to know if you're going to do the streaming coverage of bracelet events as you did last year. You mentioned earlier that you're still not sure exactly what's going to happen with the ESPN coverage of the final nine. What about streaming coverage of other events during the WSOP? Has that been decided yet?
You know, every event will be streamed or televised, right? So you know you have the million-dollar event, which is going to be – it's already been confirmed that event will be televised on ESPN. The main event will be televised on ESPN. And everything else will definitely be streamed, if not televised. So that's kind of the plan for this year. We thought it was a success last year. People could log on. You know, we had some tough lessons that we learned and, you know, have improved it a little bit, and we continue to get better with that product. But, yeah, I can definitely say that those events will be streamed next year.
Okay.
Given no technical difficulty.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's kind of a sensitive question from Mario Z, who tweeted to Dennis's Twitter account, Dennis_Phillips. Are you going to cover up Chris Ferguson's banner like you did Russ Hamilton's?
No comment.
Ooh.
No comment. I mean, you know, guys, I don't know what's going to happen with the banners, who's going to go up, but don't think it's really appropriate conversation point.
Okay. How about one from your buddy Alan Kessler, who, of course, is the only person who knows more about structure than you?
He knows more about structure than anybody in the world.
Anybody in the world, I should have said. You're right. He wants you to discuss the new 4 hours of the same level in mixed games. I don't even know what he's talking about. Do you?
So this year, there are 5 events that we're going to test out. They're all higher limit events, test out a new strategy. So a lot of the higher limit players complained last year that the levels were too slow. Nobody got eliminated in the first few rounds. It was meaningless to even start at the beginning of the tournament. You have 30,000 in chips, and you win 700 chip pots. It just didn't make any sense to have, you know, these meaningless levels. So what we did this year was we're taking 5 events, and they will be as follows. There'll be the 2 5K stud events, the stud and the stud high-low, 8 or better, the 10,000 horse event, the 5,000 limit hold'em, and the 5,000 Omaha 8 or better. And we're going to start the levels off higher, where level 4 would normally be for those respective starting chips. And we're going to play that same level for 4 levels. And so what that'll do is it will obviously speed up the action a little bit in the beginning, make the pots in the early stages a little more meaningful, and then by the time you get to level 5 or 6, now people have built up a few chips, and you'll actually get more play in the middle and the end versus playing really, really slow and then the tournament's ending really, really fast. So I think that's going to improve it definitely some of the mid-level play for sure. And it's an experiment. We think it's going to be great. A lot of the big players ask for it, and we hope that they like it. And it's like anything else that we do. If it's not an enhancement, it's not an improvement, and it doesn't, you know, create a better event for these guys to compete at, then we'll change it. And if it becomes successful, who knows? That strategy may work for every single limit-type event that we have on the schedule. But again, this is only for 5 events. It's going to be a little test, and we think that it's actually going to be better for the players. And now it doesn't matter if you come in level 1, 2, 3, or 4. You're still playing, but you know it makes more sense now to come in to level 1 because now you're going to get a time to accumulate chips at this level for 4 hours, and then now build up some chips so when you finally start going up in blinds, you've got a nice stack and something to play with as opposed to being desperate 5 or 6 levels. In the past, nobody got eliminated the first few levels, and then they just went like hotcakes.
All right.
So I think this will better the play for the limit players.
All right, we've only got 1 minute left. Dennis, you got one last question for Jack?
Well, I do. Since we only have 109 days, 13 hours, 3 minutes, and 7 seconds till the World Series, what's your projection on the main event? Where are we going to break the 7,000 mark again this year, do you think?
You know, every year surprises me. Every year we have more players than we had the year before. So, you know, my speculation is always going to be we're planning for more. We got more tables. You know, we have more opportunity to accommodate more players. You know, if all things equal to every other year that we've had the World Series, then I would say that you could see an increase in attendance, for sure.
If you want to see the full schedule that Jack has posted, it's at WSOP.com. We look forward to being there for most of it. Dennis, now living in Las Vegas, will probably be there almost every day. I'm going to try to get out for a couple of weeks of it as well. Jack, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. I know there's so much to talk about. We couldn't squeeze it into 1 hour here today. Maybe we'll talk some more as we get a little bit closer to the springtime.
Thanks a lot, guys. I always appreciate coming on your show, and I like to thank all the players because without them, you know, WSOP would be nothing. So we want to continue to make it great for everyone and hope to see everyone out this summer for the 43rd Annual World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas.
Jack Effel, Tournament Director of the WSOP, joining us here at the final table. Dennis, I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
He's Dennis Phillips. He's Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at the World Series of Poker Room at Harris in St. Louis.